All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, January 19th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be discussing a five-game NBA slate here for FanDuel and DraftKings. If you are first time with us, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com. If you like typing in less letters on your keyboard, you can head over to the site now and grab pretty much all the free content you want for every sport that is going with DFS, NBA, NHL, NFL, still time for that. And then you can also grab a free three-day trial to our projection system that's powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab that will calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NFL, baseball when time comes around, all included under one subscription blanket. So you head over there, free for 3 days, just $29.95 a month after that. About as good a deal as you'll find in the whole entire DFS industry. We think you will try it out and you will stick around for the long term. So free for 3 days, $29.95 after a month after, dfsr.com/membership, and you are all set. All right, buddy. Coming off a weird and wacky night in NBA last night, big Wednesday slate, a little calmer tonight, though there's a bunch of stuff that we can break down and just sort of dissect, especially in terms of some recent injury pieces. Let's start at point guard. I looked over at our site that we co-owned together this morning and saw Kyrie Irving as the feature picture, so I'm going to assume that he is a good play tonight. What do you think? I didn't actually read the article or anything, but why bother? You'll just tell me whatever is in it right now. But Cleveland's minus 12.5 against Phoenix. And there's no news about anyone resting here or anything, at least as of right now. At what point do we worry about a guy like Kyrie in terms of a blowout, or is there just other point guard value that might just end up creeping to the top in terms of cash games?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is about the point where we start worrying about a blowout. So I think your intuition there, Doug, spot on. I think what the system basically is saying here is Phoenix, one of the fastest paced teams in the league at a 102 pace, puts them just behind Brooklyn and Golden State. So, you know, they're going to be the extra possessions generated by such a fast team, especially in comparison with Cleveland's relatively slow pace, is just going to generate outsized opportunity. And so it's going to look at a guy like Kyrie and say, you know, on a given game, Kyrie's going to have X possessions. In this game, he's going to have X times 0.05 possessions, and that really means something, right? Now, Kyrie is a guy also who just hasn't been that great recently and frankly hasn't been super since his three-game absence. And so you're going to look at him and probably not be over the moon. I mean, he did pay 40 minutes the last time they played Phoenix a week ago. So I do think he's still a very reasonable play, but I also think that he's probably, you know, while he's the headlining picture, the dirty secret there is that oftentimes the writers besides us just grab one of the existing pictures. So he might have been just one of the guys we had a licensed picture for sitting around the system, because I think talking about him first is kind of burying the lead. With Chris Paul out tonight, we get a double point guard option in Austin Rivers and Raymond Felton that probably really should... We don't have the Austin Rivers and Raymond Felton picture of them like high-fiving each other during a timeout lying around, but if we did, they would be the headlining plays tonight.
Yeah, I get it's funny about them. So we have them for a lot of minutes, 37 and 35. That could be low. I mean, at this point, the Clippers are really playing with nobody, right? So we've seen these guys play major minutes, Rivers especially.
Yeah, Felton even is top 37. I mean,
right. I mean, I think at what point do we just – and we've seen the Clippers' willingness to play a starting lineup of Rivers, Felton, and Redick together. And I just wonder at which point, like, do we just take these guys to, like, close to 40 minutes and say they just don't have any other guards, right? They just don't have – any other real true ball handlers that can bring the ball up, and they're willing to play Rivers at like sort of like a super small ball three, I guess is where they've been playing him at times, also doubling as a
point guard. A three guard rotation, but sure,
exactly. Like, are 37 and 35 minutes just simply too low in these guys? Like, should we just kind of bust them up to 39 and say this is the reality, they don't have anyone else that can really play with Chris Paul out?
You could. I don't know. One of the things, this is always the devil's bargain we talk about before going into slates like this, which is if you're going to give Rivers, say, 39 minutes, right? Can he ever go over 39 minutes? You know, so like I think 37 is sort of fair. I mean, I think perhaps more to the point would be, you know, just making sure that the usage bumps and those sort of changes were accurate, or that we were accurate on the Clippers in general. I mean, one of the weird things about even running queries on things like this is there haven't been that many minutes this season where Blake and Chris Paul have been off the court. Right. So, you know, just going with those data might not be the most accurate way to approach a situation like this. And it might be a time where we turn more to Vegas and say, what do you guys think about this? You know, and so
it's funny you mentioned that, because even with Paul and Griffin out, Clippers are still minus one. Like, they're still favored over the Timberwolves, which, if you're the Timberwolves,
the Timberwolves stink.
I don't know if they actually look at stuff like this, but they're like, man, these guys are missing their absolute two best players. We're still dogs in this game. Like, what do we need to do? I mean, the answer is just be better, because there's not a very they're a team that I think people probably
get better at basketball.
People think they're better than they are because they have some like real name. They have some names in the team.
Yeah, Towns.
Well, I mean, people even think like Rubio's good, which he's really not. And so like Wiggins is good, but the fact that they're still underdogs here against a Clipper team that is essentially running out their, you know, their second unit except for DeAndre Jordan and I guess Redick. But I think the fact that the Vegas still sees them putting up points, those points can only come at this point from a few places. And those places are, because, like, you know, you get Mabamute, he's a total zero on offense. So where are these points coming from? It's not really from their bench either. I think I'm willing to take the Rivers and Felton up into those really high 30s and just think that this is just what they're going to need to do to really just score. And I don't know. Yeah, to me, 37, 35 just do kind of strike me just at this point as a little bit low. Do you think you see people play them kind of together on FanDuel in terms of cash games because they're just sort of in that mid-tier?
You know, I do because I think, well, for two reasons. First of all, they're hot punts. They're probably cheaper now than they will be at any point in the next couple weeks. And so in the old strike while the iron's hot category, I think a lot of people will go there. And the next reason is that the other options at point guard tonight are just kind of, they all come with their own set of question marks, right? So, you know, we talked about Kyrie being on his end of the blowout. Well, on the other end of there, you can go Eric Bledsoe. You know, so would you rather have Kyrie as a 12.5-point favorite or Bledsoe as a 12.5-point dog? Like, neither of those strikes me as particularly appealing, even if both of them might be pretty affordably priced right now. As you start to go down the list, you know, you got Derrick Rose, John Wall, like all these guys, they're just not, like John Wall right now at 10-2, that's not an aggressively cheap price for him at all. Like we were happy playing 9,000 for Wall and he was still kind of matchup dependent. And so even a nice matchup with the Knicks, he kind of falls out of favor. The one guy I'm actually looking at tonight that I think could, because I think right now I'm kind of locked into Rivers and Felton, but the one guy who might give him a run for his money is Tony Parker. Parker actually recently has been playing more minutes than I think most people realize, just because he had been more in like the mid to low 20s for a lot of the season. But in the last three games, he's played 29 to 33 minutes. Three of the last four games, he's played 29 to 33 minutes. And he has an excellent matchup against Denver tonight. So Denver, of course, the team that's allowed the most fantasy points per game to opposing point guards this season. Parker is still a good point guard, even at his old age here. And while I wouldn't feel great about it, and obviously there's still the very significant blowout risk here as well, if I was just not going to play one of the Rivers and Felton group, he would probably be the next guy up for me.
Yeah, he's interesting because I think you're correct. I don't think people see him as that kind of player here. I think people just have a view of the Spurs in general as this team that is, I don't know, unless they're
playing. Stay away, maybe Kawhi sometimes.
Exactly. It's like maybe Kawhi, or if one of those big guys is out, like Kawhi's out, then you play
the other guy. Right.
Exactly. But and if you look at their game logs a lot, you see like a lot of just 26-minute performances because they're just so good and they kill teams and their bench is good. So, no, I think you probably get separation on Parker in a situation like that. And I think you made a great point about Wall. Like at what point he's been great. So this is why the price climbs, is that he just is like this kind of 20 and 10 guy almost. And
yeah, is this his new normal? I mean, he's third in the league in time of possession per game. So like that's worth something, right? And that's could be worth 10,000.
Right. And 9,600 on DraftKings. I love the double-double bonus on him just because the assist numbers are so great just on a game-to-game basis. So I'd probably be a little bit more inclined to do it there at 96. But 10-2, it's going to start pushing. It's really starting to push up the top of that register on what we're willing to play. Excuse me.
A quick note on Parker, too, before we move on past him. So, you know, I think people see him as a lot more variable than he actually is. So in his last 11 games, he's paid 5x or better in 9 of those games. So, and one of those games was Phoenix, where he had only 18 points. So hurt you for sure, but didn't kill you. And then he did kill you against Charlotte. But generally speaking, Parker is just worth this price. And in a plus matchup, he could be worth it even more. So I guess this is all to say, I don't know if you need to force Tony Parker into your lineups, but if he winds up showing in there in the optimizer or something, I wouldn't just insta-X him out like I might have a month ago.
Well, this is interesting too, because I believe, you know, without knowing exactly how FanDuel and DraftKings write their algorithms, you know, a lot of it's performance-based, but I think also part of it is ownership-based. And when a guy like Parker just spends weeks of no one playing him, really across any industry, excuse me, across any game format, weeks and weeks of that, we'll just drive down the price, even though, like you said, you look down this game log, it's not, it can't be performance-based because he's been very good. He's been very good just even on some limited minutes games. So
right.
when I think when you factor in that he's getting, you know, 5% or less in ownership numbers in cash games, then you're just going to see that number tick down. And then what you're going to get, as I'm channeling the inner chatter on our site, is going to say, Tony Parker, are you serious? And they're going to forget that this is, again, these things are all price dependent as well, which is this is a very, very difficult thing to factor in when you see a name like Tony Parker. There's just guys like that you just don't, you don't want to play them. Like, you just don't want to play Tony Parker. I get that feeling. Let's go on to shooting guard. Will Barton got the start last game for Gary Harris. He played, I think, 34 or 35 minutes, was very, very good. It seems like that will be how Denver rolls again tonight, though. You know, who kind of ever knows with Denver, if you can trust 100% what they're going to do. They're huge underdogs in this game to the Spurs. Can you trust a guy like Barton hitting that, you know, mid-30s minutes again at shooting guard for a team that, A, could get blown out and are playing a very good defensive team in the Spurs?
Well, yeah, I think tonight you're going to have to make the decision probably, are you going to play games with blowouts or aren't you? And if you don't, you're reducing a five-game slate down to a three-game slate. And I'm not sure you just want to take 40% of the player pool off the table, particularly when you have some very great spots. I mean, if Barton were against basically anybody else, he would be like a 95% start tonight. And given that he's against the Spurs, that ownership percentage is rightfully going to go down. I mean, the Spurs aren't a great matchup really for anybody at any position, maybe exempting point guard. But Barton, I mean, we've seen him so many times in the past just step into this role and instantly be worth like near 7,000. And so, you know, we've seen this actually on DraftKings. Like we were talking about Beal against Memphis the other night. There is a point to which you can reduce a guy's price to where he's matchup proof. And I don't know if Barton's there at 5,300, but he's darn close. And 35 minutes against the Lakers, obviously he put up 8x. You can't expect that against the Spurs tonight, but say he only gets 28 minutes and because they're getting blown out, he plays like he did against OKC in a tough defender in Oladipo, where he had 30 points. You can absolutely live with that and then some. So I think Barton's a guy who, even in a tough matchup, the price is to the point where it would be really hard to imagine on such a short slate, even with the blowout risk, not including him in lineups.
Yeah, no, I think I'm totally with you there. And I five games, you can't really avoid. You just can't avoid all the bad matchups. The price is there. I think I want to be able to trust. If we weren't to have news by 7 o'clock, if they were changing their starting lineup, and I don't suspect they would change it just because he was pretty good last game, I think I'd feel pretty comfortable with it. What do you feel?
Yeah, well, and just let me piggyback on the blowout risk thing too, and we'll get to the next guys. Because you also have to have a backup plan, right? It's not enough to say, I'm just going to avoid these blowout games. Like, you're going to stack the Dallas-Miami game. That game has a 25-point lower total than the Phoenix Cleveland game, for instance, you know, and the Denver Spurs game is just a point below the Cleveland Phoenix game. So you're not only taking off some really good fantasy teams, but you're also taking off the games with the two highest totals. And I just don't think it's a night where you can do that. But sorry, what were you going to ask?
I was just going to throw out a couple more names at you. The first two would be along the same lines as Rivers and Felton are Redick and Crawford. Where do you see, you know, Crawford is not going into their starting lineup, so we don't need to hold our breath on something like that. They do play, you know, they exclusively play him off the bench. The minutes can be up and down whenever you come off the bench, but he's the absolute minimum on FanDuel, 3,500, and it's more expensive on DraftKings. But do you see him at 3,500? We have him at around 30 to 31 minutes right now. With them so, again, still so thin in the backcourt, is that the correct number, do you think? It's a tick too high? Like, does he kind of need things to go right for him? He's had some truly dreadful-looking games in the last three or so, actually four of, you know, double, less than double-digit points.
Yeah, really awful. You could add up all four games, and, like, that would be, you'd be happy with that for one game.
So what do we do with a guy like Crawford, who is clearly struggling, but now they're just a different team now? Like, they just don't have their best player. So what do we do with a situation like Hibbs?
Yeah, he's a very tricky one to figure out, because I think you can look at a guy like Redick and kind of say, okay, well, Paul being out means Redick is going to have a few extra minutes, probably a little bit more opportunity, a little more time on ball, and all those incremental additions will make him more playable than he had been. Crawford's a little bit of a different scenario in that, you know, we've really seen him thrive without Chris Paul in the past. Basically all of his best games this season are when CP3 was on the shelf. And he's just been so bad recently, like, it's hard to know, because he's also kind of a head case, right? So you could absolutely, like, he could be scoring no points just because he's mad and sulky, and Chris Paul going down means that it's going to give him kind of a renewed license on life. Or he could just be bad, you know, and could just be, it could be a coach's memorandum. Like, listen, buddy, if you're going to go out there and shoot 15 times in 25 minutes, you're just not going to play anymore. So we don't know exactly what's going on there. And the price is just so cheap that I certainly don't hate it. It's, I think he falls in that middle ground where, like, so for instance, if like neither Rivers nor Felton showed up and I had all these like really high variance guys at various positions, I would give that pause and want to re-examine it, kind of like you were talking about in the point guard section. But if Crawford did show up or if he didn't, I would be like, eh, okay. I can live with either, you know. I'm not going to jam him in, but I won't be crushed if he shows up.
Yeah, I mean, so without having watched every single one of these games, he's running ridiculously bad from the field, which is for him the total death knell because he actually needs to score, really. That's yeah. where his bread is buttered. And so, you know, he'll chip in some pieces here and there, the occasional assist. I mean, the assist numbers are decent, 4 per game. He's never going to rebound, really, and he's not a big defensive guy. But his last 4 games, he's 0 for 5 from the field, 1 for 9, then he, you know, kind of a bounce back, 3 for 5, and then a 1 for 12. And so when you're looking at that, you know, 3 of those 4 games, he made 2 total shots. When that's going to happen to him, you're really, really in trouble. It's also just not likely.
It has
likely
a snowballing effect. It makes him shoot less and all those other problems.
Well, which it clearly did. Like, he just had to come off the court, right? Like, he played 25, 22, 23 minutes. But I do think you see the numbers trickle back up to that near 30 range. If he can get back into the double-digit shot attempts, I'm totally fine with it. And just, again, it's, again, price-dependent. He's the minimum. And when you're a minimum guy, this is essentially like the punt situation you're looking for. I think I feel pretty comfortable with it at a weaker position. What do you think about Beal against the Knicks? They're on the back-to-back after playing Memphis last night. I don't know. The Wizards have just never been A, smart, B, seeming like they have a clue about what to do with like player minutes. Beal's a guy that just always gets hurt, and then they always just run a minutes, mostly because they don't have the personnel to bring in. Like, they don't.
And then he's hurt again.
Yeah. They just don't want to. They just don't want to. They don't. Like, they don't want to play him. Guns to their head. They don't want to play him these huge minutes. But then they're like, well, who can we play? Thomas Satoransky?
Tomas Satoransky.
Like,
yeah.
We're going to play Trey Burke? Like, you know, Sheldon McClendon? Like, these are our other options. Like, I just have, we have to put Bradley Beal back on the court. How do you
Right, we have to put a competitive product out there.
Exactly. Like, these guys are auto zeros. Marcus Thornton. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they just have a lot of these losers. Jeez, I just even really, reeling down those names. What do you think about Beal on the back-to-back?
Yeah, I think Beal is a guy, he's kind of interesting because we talked about him against Memphis last night, and he's kind of funny because when you watch Beal play, he doesn't feel like a guy like Kyle Korver, say, who like doesn't create his own shot or it's very matchup dependent. But I think especially his handles, like he's just not a great dribbler for me. He's like okay, and he's obviously really fast, but he just doesn't like, I don't know, he just doesn't create his shot in the way you would like for a guy who's at the $7,000 price tag in bad matchups. Now, once you get him in good matchups, and that little extra step makes a big difference. I think he goes from a guy who, you know, maybe is only worth 6,000 fair value to in the 7,000s pretty healthily. And I think the Knicks are a solid enough matchup in that regard that I would be happy deploying him here. It's not exactly clear to me who's going to wind up covering him here. Like, you know, I think Rose will be on Wall and Beal could get kind of any number of these wings. I mean, the Knicks situation is kind of weird as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. That's another one. That's,
yeah, exactly. But so all that to say, I'd like Beal tonight. Fine. If he shows up in lineups, I'm happy about it. I don't know if I just prefer taking the value on guys like Barton or Crawford or, you know, guys who have kind of new situations. And if Beal's just one of those classic $7,000 plays that looks good at 10 a.m. but not at 6 p.m. But right now, yeah, I'm happy if Beal shows up.
Yeah, the next situation we'll get to here coming up shortly with small forward. But yeah, I think that, you know, another guy you can maybe take a look at possibly Seth Curry's been playing a few more minutes in the starting lineup. He's been playing up and over 30, 31 over the last couple games. Not exciting, but still also in that Jamal Crawford range of just coming very, very cheap. Like he's 4,000 on FanDuel. And if you think he's just going to stick in that lineup, they like the rotations and he's going to play 30 minutes a game, then.
And against Miami, though. Yeah.
No. I don't love it. This is why he's last in the list of the guys we mentioned. Let's go on to small forward. Last night, yeah, I think I started off our initial phone call before we started recording and said, if you told me the Knicks were going to score 117 points without Porzingis last night, and I would have set Melo's point total at like 30. I mean, actual point total, not his fantasy point total. He ends up not eclipsing that for fantasy purposes. He was bad. Their bench was great. Rose was decent. I don't know exactly a Porzingis' status at this point, but Melo's a guy who is, you know, without Porzingis against Washington, still kind of shows up as a decent play. How much does a performance like last night affect you, your thoughts on Anthony?
I mean, I think it can't affect it too much. Anthony had a tough, first of all, a tough matchup with Crowder, and he had a tough shooting night, shot 5 for 14 from the field. And, you know, again, we've talked about the cascading effect of where shooting poorly oftentimes means you take fewer shots. And then if you shoot poorly on those shots, well, all of a sudden you're really out of luck. What you didn't like about Melo last night was also just the overall lack of involvement. Wasn't really involved on the glass, had just 3 assists, you know, 1 block, no steals. So, and that's what Melo is. You know, he's a scoring dependent small forward. And doesn't really, not really a plus contributor in other categories. And if the scoring's not there, he's just totally devastating you. So, you know, he's, I think he is what he is. He's an erratic, shoot first small forward that's probably overpriced when he has his whole team healthy around him, and probably underpriced without Porzingis in particular. So I do think he's a solid play. You know, Otto Porter, not really a defensive stopper for Washington. And I wouldn't feel. Like, if he's in the optimal lineup, I'm not, like, calling you on the phone being like, dude, you have to put lineups in tonight. These lineups are killing it, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's where he's going to end up. I think he actually will. It doesn't look like Porzingis is going to play. He hasn't been, according to RotoWorld right now, he hasn't been officially ruled out. But he also mentioned, like, playing Saturday against the Suns. So that sure doesn't sound like a guy who's planning on playing tonight. So I think I'm willing to go back to Melo. I think people will be affected too much by what happened last night, and that's just not a good proxy for what necessarily is going to happen tonight.
Yeah, that's fair.
You also get, you know, if Porzingis were to sit again, you also get, here we go, Mindaugas Kuzminskas.
Mindaug!
Yeah, the Mindaug. Guy we played in pretty much every lineup last night, was very good at his price. The price has not really climbed, at least on FanDuel, too much. He's, you know, DraftKings, again, we've said this many times, they're quicker to price adjust. He's still coming very cheap there, though, at 4,500. Is he now, I mean, obviously this is why I love the NBA, because, well, this is why I love DFS in general, but NBA is particularly good at this, is like, okay, it is January. This is the Knicks are going to be rolling out a starting lineup with include Ron Baker and Kuzminskas. And you'd be like, oh boy, like what happened? Like, did everyone die? Like, did the NBA go on strike? Like, maybe there was like a CBA going, like, and they just decided to like preemptively strike.
Just bring scabs in.
Exactly. Well, totally. Do you think that he ends up being, let's assume Porzingis isn't playing, is he ends up becoming like a chalk play again tonight?
I think so. I mean, the other beautiful thing about DFS is that it can just turn a guy into an absolute hero for a short stretch of time. Yeah. And when the Mindaug train is rolling, I'm not one to stand in the way of it, right? I mean, 26 or more fantasy points in 3 of his last 4 games. He's playing a lot of minutes. They're trusting him on offense. He rebounds the position fairly well. And again, just essentially the bare minimum. So yeah, I'm all in. He's in every lineup guy for me right now.
What do you think about LeBron? We mentioned with Irving that there's, you know, there's some blowout risk here. LeBron, you know, of all players that are going on this slate, probably has the highest just overall just point expectation. Yeah, he does. But I don't know. We get worried if he's going to play. That's assuming a 37 minutes. If he were to see less than that, is he still safe if he, you know, either A, didn't see the fourth quarter, or maybe played some more, let's say 34 minutes because the game gets out of hand. Can we still consider him safe here?
I think so. I mean, I think what we need to see from LeBron to not consider him a good play in a very high-paced matchup like this against Phoenix is just a sustained, you know, a couple weeks of him not being a $10,000 player. Right now we have a week of that, but I don't think we're there yet. He wasn't great against Phoenix in their last matchup and has now a stretch of like some relatively poor performances, but you know, some of those in tough matchups like against Utah. So I'm not ready to write LeBron off just yet. Still kind of expensive, but I think the plus matchup with Phoenix probably makes up for that. I'd be fine playing LeBron. Again, if you're just going to decide for tonight that you're just going to ignore blowout risk, which I think is pretty reasonable, LeBron also not a guy who's too deeply affected even when games do get moderately out of hand. Like, it really takes a deep, deep blowout for him to lose minutes. So, yeah, I'm totally cool with LeBron.
Yeah, there's a couple other interesting names here just in terms of value. I mean, you can possibly look at Otto Porter at small forward. You know, it's always tough to judge just what overall just the differences losing a player like Paul makes on the overall defensive scheme. From that, and I say that because of a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who's, you know, still under 7,000. The game's supposed to stay close. Minnesota is at least in triple digits in terms of implied total, so he's interesting. But I think that what you end up seeing here is Kuzminskas as a kind of a chalk play, and then people's maybe deciding between Anthony or LeBron in that like upper register of small forward types, because the rest of the position just does not look all that great when you just scroll down through some of the names. Walk me through power forward here. You know, we have guys like Love, who, again, follow a lot of the same, you know, decision-making process, I think, as Irving and LeBron. I mean, a guy like Fareed or Jokic, but these matchups are bad. What anything stand out to you here at power forward?
Yeah, I mean, so for starters, you said that's all we see at small forward. You also listed like approximately 11 small forwards. So I think that speaks to small forward being a very deep position tonight. That we have no such embarrassment of riches at power forward whatsoever. I mean, Fareed's a guy. Like, let's start by saying playing any Nugget is just asking to play a guy who's going to play 20 minutes some random night that nobody knows about. So Fareed, like, yeah, he's played 33 and 30 minutes in the last two games and been quite good on this price. I think games before that, he played 16 and 19 minutes and hadn't played 30 minutes for like a solidly a month prior, if all season. Yeah, maybe not all season. So you're buying high on Fareed right now. There's no doubt about it. He's absolutely worth 5,600 if he plays 33 minutes a game. But the risk that you're taking on by doing that, you know, against the Spurs, who are good and have a good front court and could potentially be blowing them out, the Nuggets are just like this emotional mess of a team that can't decide who to play how many minutes. So they're just like doing the old Karis wheel of, oh, you get off. No, you get on. No, you get off. You get off. Do we have any good players on this team? It doesn't seem like we have any good players at all, you know. And Fareed is one of the first guys on the chopping block in that scenario. Jokic potentially a little bit more interesting, but he's also dealing with a sprained right ankle. So while he's considered probable right now, he's far from a slam dunk to play. And I think taking all that together, it's not, you know, neither of those is particularly reassuring to me.
No, yeah, this whole position just looks bad, right? I think you'll see some people maybe talk themselves into Markieff Morris, mostly because on FanDuel, you run into this
huge, yeah, I don't mind that spot.
You just run into this huge problem of having to play two of these guys. Like, it's hard enough to roster one of them. We said this so many times. Hard enough to roster just one power forward. Now when you have to choose between two or among two, and you get to these other names are just bad matchups, the minutes aren't totally there, they're kind of all over the place. You made a good point about Fareed. If they're getting killed, Fareed's just not on the court, right, at all. Nope. And there's just a good chance that he's just not on the court because the matchup is just terrible for him. Like, he's not,
or the coach has a stomach ache or, like, whatever.
You right, know? Just like he had a bad dream last night, and that's just, like, you know, that's just the end of his minutes. Like, I'm not exactly sure. And
this astrological signs, not, this no idea what's going on.
Nuggets coaching independent. Like, they've just had this problem for years and years and years because they just don't have personnel that's good both ways. And this is, and Fareed's just another classic example. Yeah. Like, he's going to have really have problems with a guy like Aldridge. And Jokic is going to have impossible times with a guy like Gasol. So these guys are out of trouble. There's more ways for those guys to go wrong than go right. And it's okay to go wrong at 4,000. It's another way to go wrong at 5,600. And
or 8,500.
Right. Well, yeah, Jokic. I don't even want to get to Jokic because I don't think I can even stomach it. Like, he's 9,400 or something like that.
9,400. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like, yes. I didn't notice that. He's 9,400 on FanDuel. That's a complete no-thanks territory for me. Like, I don't know what I would need to see. Well, I don't know what kind of safety I would need to feel with him to begin paying this price.
He might not even play tonight. Jokic is probably too much Jokic time tonight. The other guy, well, and Love, you mentioned too. Love also questionable tonight with a back thing. So actually, the more I'm looking at this position, the more I think we're going to probably have Markieff in there, and then some other piece of news is going to come up that leads us in the direction of playing someone else, like, you know, maybe James Johnson or just, you know, somebody else just bubbles up to the forefront who we're not expecting, like, you know, Alex Len, if Tyson Chandler sits, which we have no reason to believe he will, but right. I'm just giving examples of things that could come up that might create opportunities elsewhere, because as of now, this position is bad enough that it casts a shadow on the whole slate for me, to where it kind of feels like gambling if I'm just going to play one of these random dudes like Kenneth Fareed, who he could play between 16 and 35 minutes, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, you mentioned James Johnson is a really good example of that risk. Like, yes, he's been playing minutes in the 30s. He still comes off the bench, and we've been down the road many times where if you're playing a bench player, you are asking for the minutes to become less than they usually are, right? It very rarely goes the other way because, yes, you might be in there in crunch time, and Miami has played him in crunch time. But that's,
yeah, play 38 minutes against Milwaukee.
But it's very case specific, and if you're not coming in at the beginning of the game, and you're not going to be in there at the end of the game because of matchup, then there's not a lot of other places for you to fit. So that's where I just get worried about a guy like James Johnson, and the prices come up because he's been very, very good. So yeah, power forward just in general, like I said, playing one is hard enough. Playing two feels like, I don't know, total disaster. Last night, we're going to finish off with center. Last night, Noah and Porzingis were ruled out. Kyle O'Quinn, you know, we're sitting there about 30 minutes before
he must have been a great play then, right?
Well, you would think so. he was an absolute total chalk start. This is why it doesn't totally kill you necessarily, but
75%
played 10 minutes. So I haven't read up on the news of this game. I was traveling last night, so I didn't watch the game necessarily. It wasn't a foul trouble thing. It was just kind of like, yeah, you're going to start, and that's going to be the end of you. What do we do with a situation like this? How much does So Quinn is a guy that had played some minutes off the bench, and we had seen games of him playing 30 minutes when Noah was out. And now all of a sudden you play 10 and Hernan Gomez gets more run. I don't think we're going back this direction again, but if Noah were to be ruled out again, where do you put the next minutes?
Well, I think people are going to play Hernan Gomez. Like, you know, he was so good last night, even on just 20 minutes. And he didn't play at all of the game prior to that. But the fact that he's basically a minimum price guy, put up 17 and 11, 30 points. People were grumpy. They saw the O'Quinn line. They had a reason to key into that game and figure out what the heck was going on, where are O'Quinn's minutes. I think people will go down that well. I don't think I will, just because, again, I'm just not going to probably want to start a guy for cash games who played 0 minutes 2 games ago and will probably still be coming off the bench. Maybe if you get the word that he's starting, then Hernan Gomez becomes a good play, but just too risky for me overall. I think if I'm going to play this slate tonight, which the more we talk, the less I'm feeling excited about him, but I might play a guy like Marcin Gortat. Gortat, he's kind of like the anti all these other guys in that he's just actually goes out there and plays minutes. You know, he's not been great on the minutes that he's played, but the fact that he like was physically on the court for 36 minutes last night against Memphis is just very reassuring in a sea of guys who barely play for their teams. And so, you know, maybe he doesn't wind up being the best point per dollar guy, but you know, if I compare him to the cheaper guys all have these huge question marks. The more expensive guys, like, I'm not going to play Hassan Whiteside. The minutes aren't there on the price right now, and that's not a good matchup. Karl Anthony Towns, is he really a $10,000 player just in a vacuum, and particularly against DeAndre Jordan and the Clippers? I'm not so sure. DeAndre Jordan, who knows, like, with Chris Paul there, he just doesn't create any of his own shots. Pau Gasol hasn't been playing minutes. Like, there's just so many question marks here. One guy in front of the next, they're all just total unknowns. Tristan Thompson, I'm not pumped. So this position is so bad tonight that I'm just getting a stomachache looking at it.
This is the issue here with power forward and center. And the other issue with a guy like Hernan Gomez is, sure, you can play him. He's cheap. There are very few places to pay up tonight, too. Like, so this isn't a night like where we have Harden or we have Westbrook or we even have Giannis or Davis or these guys that are, you know, $11,000 players. The most expensive guy in FanDuel is LeBron at 10.5, and then I guess you get Wall too at 10,000. But even those prices for being the most expensive guy in a slate is just not that much, right? And so, yeah, sure, you save to get a guy like him possibly, and then you're just paying up for sort of just not that much safety at the higher end of the pay scale. So, yeah, this all just ends up meeting in the kind of crappy middle, I think, at least as of right now. This is 11 o'clock Eastern on Thursday, but it's not jumping out to me as this, like, amazing slate that we need to jam money in on because these are the only games that we're given the opportunity to play. I think there's just a lot of uncertainty. Again, it might crystallize a little bit more as we get some more news. It's nice to know that guys like Porzingis probably aren't expected to play now, so we can make some early judgments. But overall, there are some really, really, really big dice rolls, and I'm not so sure I want to totally go down the path, but we'll see. All right, we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Head on over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that populates optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's powered by our good friends over at lineuplab.com. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. I think you'll be pleased with the results. Buddy, we'll be back again tomorrow talking some more NBA.